Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, as we make the transition here from the draft into rookie orientation this weekend at Lambeau Field, the biggest news is at the running back position. As we talked about in our last show, the Packers drafted three running backs in the fourth through seventh rounds, all on Saturday, the third day of the draft. But then right after the draft, the Packers released two running backs, Don Jackson and Christian Michael, getting released and no longer on the roster. So what looked like it was going to be an extremely crowded position has now been thinned down a little bit. Your thoughts on how this is shaping up here in the early stages of the offseason?
Yeah, well, I know if you go back to our insider inbox this past week, that was probably one of the most popular questions. People more specifically asking about the decision to let go of Christian Michael at this juncture of the offseason coming off of that draft. And I mean, here's the thing, and the Packers have done this before with certain veteran players, younger 3-4 year veterans. It's pretty clear the direction they're going at running back coming out of that draft. You have Ty Montgomery, you have Aaron Ripkowski, that's your 1-2 starting punch right now, and then you have these three rookies and Joe Carriage all coming back. That's a lot of bodies already in and of itself. And with Christian Michael and Don Jackson, I think this is an opportunity for those guys now to get back on the market and see if they can catch on with another team. Because as much as you don't want to be released, you don't want to be let go, this now enables them 2.5 months until the start of training camp to latch on with another team. If the Packers carry them through the offseason program and carry them through training camp and they don't get a lot of opportunities, it's a lot more difficult to get a job in the first week of September than it is in the first week of May.
Most definitely. There are only so many snaps to go around through OTAs, through training camp. There are only so many reps. And when you look at the Packers situation, you have Ty Montgomery. This is his first offseason as a running back. You want to and need to get him as much work as possible. You have three draft picks that are coming in as rookies. We'll see when we get the final list of the undrafted rookies if there's perhaps another running back on that list. So you only have so many snaps to go around. If in the way the coaches and the personnel staff wants to divide up those reps to evaluate players, if there aren't going to be enough snaps for certain guys, then you're right. You let them go and see if they can find a better opportunity elsewhere. It's really just the nature of the business.
Yeah, and the Mike Spofford Let's Be Real moment of the week is the fact that you have three rookies now who need work.
Yeah.
And obviously Montgomery, this is his first full offseason in the program, an opportunity for him to learn at a slower pace. But also, you have three guys that Ben Sherman's is going to have to get ready for this summer and for this training camp, because that is one position, Mike, where you can make an impact right away off the bat. And I think when the Packers look at those three young running backs, it's about getting them up to speed now and trying to see what you can get out of them in 2017.
Yeah, and I know we talked a lot in our last show about Jamal Williams, and I was really intrigued by the comments from John Eric Sullivan about him being kind of a late game, cold weather, late season type of running back. Shifting gears to Aaron Jones from UTEP. Again, comments that intrigued me. Elliot Wolf, we heard from him, and he talked about how Aaron Jones, kind of a home run hitter in a sense for UTEP. He's not only the all-time leading rusher in the history of the school, put up lots of big numbers over the course of his career, but he also had a lot of long runs, individual runs, in the course of his career at UTEP, according to Wolf. And when you look at some of the numbers, I believe you had pointed them out to me. Six times in his career, he had over 100 yards in one quarter.
Yeah.
13 times in his career, he had over 100 yards just in one half of a game. You don't get those kinds of partial game statistics without breaking some pretty long runs.
Yeah, and especially so. And I mean, that what that all came to in its totality, 4,114 yards, an all-time leading rusher at UTEP, and also broke the 28-year-old record at the school for single-season rushing yards with 1,773. So this is a young man that really can be explosive when he gets to the second level. 5'10", 215. Again, isn't that 230-pound kind of bulldozing back, but has enough power and explosiveness that it allowed him not only the ability to get through the first line, but also be able to make defenders miss at the second level. That is what you need to do in the NFL. If you have one of those things, you might be able to, you know, get a career for yourself. But if you have both of them, that's where you can become a true difference maker. And I think when the Packers look at Aaron Jones, and obviously we'll have to see how this process goes and what training camp and the offseason program will look like, but I think they see a lot of potential in this young man to be able to be an explosive playmaker in this offense.
Yeah, Aaron Jones drafted at the end of the fifth round, and then in the seventh round, the Packers take Devontae Mays, the third running back they drafted, out of Utah State. And I guess the thing that stands out a little bit to Mays when you look at the totality of his career, you know, kind of the ups and downs that he's weathered. You talk about battling through adversity and whatnot. He had to take the junior college route to get to a Division I school, and then he's all geared up for a big final season after a big 2015 season at Utah State, but then deals with some injuries in 2016. We haven't met Devontae Mays yet. I suspect when we meet him, we're going to encounter an individual who is very, very eager and ready to get going, because that 2016 season was not what he wanted it to be.
Yeah, I mean, you want to get that bad taste out of your mouth and move on to the next phase of your career, and I think this is going to be a good opportunity for him to do that. What's interesting about Mays, though, is that you have Jamal Williams, who would end up being the all-time leading rusher at BYU. You have Aaron Jones, who is the all-time leading rusher at UTEP. Well, Devontae Mays is on the other end of the spectrum. He didn't get a lot of opportunities. Only 202 carries in college, only two receptions, I believe. So there's some question marks about exactly what his skill set is, because frankly speaking, we just haven't seen it.
Right.
You know, he played 2 years at the JUCO level and then went on to Utah State. As you said, had a really dynamic junior year. But what can he do now if you give him some more opportunities? He's the type of seventh-round pick you look for, and also at 230 pounds, he fits the prototype for that power back in this offense.
Yeah, well, I get the feeling this is just the start of many long conversations about the running back position for the Green Bay Packers in 2017. But with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here. Wes Hodkowitz over there. Wes, shifting gears back to the early rounds of the draft, specifically the Packers' first pick at 33 overall, Kevin King, the cornerback out of Washington. Turns out his high school coach in Oakland was none other than Hardy Nickerson, who some Packer fans will remember. He actually played in Green Bay at one time in his career in 2002 after a long career with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a mainstay at linebacker on those really good Tony Dungy defenses with Warren Sapp and all those guys. But Hardy Nickerson was Kevin King's head coach, and you actually got him on the phone this week for a little bit of a chat. What'd you find out?
Well, first off, the thing that's really interesting about Nickerson, he ends up being there at Bishop O'Dowd. His son, Hardy Jr., who now is signed on with the Cincinnati Bengals as an undrafted free agent, was also a student there. He was a year older than Kevin King. And what's really interesting about King's story, he really came in there. His older brother, TJ, who ended up playing at UC Davis, was what really heralded during his time there. It went down, I think, as the all-time leading receiver, all-time leading in yards for the school. So they knew they were getting a pretty special athlete, but it was actually another NFL player, Donovan Darius, who actually approached Hardy Nickerson during what would be King's sophomore year and said, "Hey, coach, there's this kid down in JV I really think you should take a look at." King was ready at that point, but he ended up finishing out the year on JV. He wanted to stay with his friends, but in the first game, his junior year, at a showcase event in Sacramento, had two interceptions in that game, and it started off what ended up being a tremendous run for him and Bishop O'Dowd. During his time there, he played receiver. He played both safety spots. He was a kick returner. They used him as a wildcat quarterback. He was a dynamic player. In his senior year, they used him in a multitude of ways. Just a really interesting player. And from everything that Hardy Nickerson said, the kind of kid you want to root for, wasn't overly recruited. It was a pretty quiet recruiting process for him until his senior year, when teams started to kind of get together after a Nike training event and seeing what he could do. But in terms of his makeup and what he brings to the table, Hardy Nickerson, who's now at Illinois with Lovie Smith, he said they're getting the total package. This is a total package player at cornerback. He gives you everything you want.
Yeah, that's interesting when you bring up wildcat quarterback. I mean, we hear stories about, you know, these draft picks. A lot of them are the all-everything guys in high school. They play every sport. They play every position there is. But playing wildcat quarterback as well as all those other positions that you mentioned on a high school team, that's pretty interesting. And the fact that it sounds like at a pretty competitive school – they wanted him on the varsity much sooner than he actually got there, as you said, because he wanted to stick with his buddies.
Yeah, and it's funny, his senior year, now the thing you got to keep in mind, he's 6'3" now. He was about 6'1" his sophomore year. He was a tall kid from the beginning. As Hardy said, you know, when he got there, they were pretty much on eye level, and by the time he left, he was looking up at him. In his senior year, they were actually in a playoff game against one of the local schools there in California in their district, and they were down by 6 with a couple minutes left to go in the game. They throw a 40-yard pass. They send him down the seam. There are 3 defenders draped on him, but with his size, is able to go up in his catch radius, pulls down the football, has enough strength then to kind of push himself into the end zone. They go up by 1 score, and then they go back on the ensuing drive, the opposing team trying to throw it, you know, 2-minute drill, all that stuff, final minute of the game. He ends up getting the interception then to seal that victory and send them to the next playoff game. Just really dynamic in how they were able to use him in you know, a multitude of different ways and what he brought to the table. And as he goes into the next level, I mean, it was pretty apparent he was going to be a cornerback going into college.
Yeah.
The player he's become now over these last 4 years at Washington, it has Nickerson really excited about what he could do for the Packers.
Yeah, well, for a player not heavily recruited, as you said, the University of Washington certainly benefited with what he was able to bring to the table, and obviously we're hoping the Packers can benefit as well. I still think it's interesting how this end of the first round of the draft played out and how he ended up in Green Bay, because a lot of talk about him being a mid to late first round pick and that he was definitely of that caliber. And I just didn't see him getting past the Seattle Seahawks at the 26th pick. It just, there were a lot of things, you know, University of Washington, his size, that type of defense that Seattle plays, everything, you know, to me indicated that Seattle would take him at 26. Well, the Seahawks decided to trade back from 26 to 31. The Atlanta Falcons then took Tack McKinley at 26. So Kevin King is there at 29 for the Packers. But then the Packers trade back to 33. Well, then the Seahawks at 31, they trade back again to 34, right, and they're sitting right behind Green Bay. And then Green Bay takes King at 33, and we'll never know. John Schneider's not necessarily going to say, but maybe if we catch him in a press box, you know, coming up here in September when he comes back to Green Bay. But I just think it's interesting how it all played out, and maybe I'm completely all wet with my belief that Seattle would be interested in taking him and adding him to their defense. We don't really know for sure, but just all the machinations of what happened there is really kind of fascinating.
Yeah, and I go back to what we kind of talked about before too with TJ Watt. I mean, yes, you have these home state stories from that perspective with King. I mean, the same city in Seattle in terms of being able to potentially make a jump from the college to the pros. But there's also a lot of value in that pick, and you have to get the player that you want to get. Yeah, both of them might turn out to be tremendous players. We'll have to wait and see. But if you take them, then you're giving up that pick, and then that prohibits you from, you know, drafting somebody else. So those are all the decisions that general managers in this league have to make. And fortunately for yourself and myself, we just have to, you know, talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, with that, Wes, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford joined by Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, just to give the fans a little bit of a taste of exactly what the rookies are going through this weekend as they come to Green Bay. It's a program that Mike McCarthy for years has run. He calls it rookie orientation. They start out with kind of your basic medical physicals, get your equipment, all of that stuff on Thursday and on Friday morning. And then Friday and Saturday are really 2 days of meetings and practices. Now, a lot of people like to refer to it as a rookie mini camp. Mike McCarthy likes to call it a rookie orientation because what it is really is to teach the young players and to show them what the meeting structure is like, what the practice structure is like. So then when they get into the full swing of things with OTAs at the end of May, which then lead into training camp, they have this little bit of a taste of just how it works here in Green Bay, and they get acclimated a little bit sooner.
Yeah, it's about trying to really hasten that process and getting involved in your position room and being able to get up to speed quickly. They're going to have the whole summer to be able to sit there and try to digest the playbook and understand all the nuances of the offense or defense, special teams, what have you. But the biggest thing is being able to get up to speed so you can get into the flow of practices. Because for the most case, unless you're, you know, one of these guys that has to go back to finish out school sometimes on the West Coast, if you're on the quarter system,
right.
These guys are participating in the OTAs. They are participating in the mini camp in the middle of June. So the quicker you're able to get up to speed on things, really that's going to be the biggest thing for your development as a player. For me personally, the most interesting thing always watching that rookie orientation is all the tryout guys they bring in, you know, too. There's a lot of kids from the state colleges that'll be there. And there's always a couple of them, you know, in a given year, two, three, sometimes four guys that get signed out of that. And in some cases end up making the roster come, you know, when you look at September. So a lot of things to kind of juggle there, but certainly it's the first step. And it's the first step to becoming an NFL football player.
Yeah, the Packers will be in the process of filling out their 90-man offseason roster. They'll have several undrafted rookies that their contracts will become official this weekend. And then, as you said, there'll be some tryout players where there might be a couple of three roster spots still available where the best of that bunch will get signed and then retained, I guess I should say, here for OTAs, and they'll get a shot to make the 53-man roster.
I think if I'm correct, and stop me if I'm not, Marwin Evans might have been one of the players last year that was actually a tryout originally.
You could be right about that.
Got signed, and then I think he ended up making the – he did make the roster, but I think he was actually one of those tryout guys that came here with really no guarantees.
Yeah, that kind of stuff does happen on a fairly regular basis. It's interesting to follow that process. The orientation in some ways starts from a group perspective. Mike McCarthy talks about it a lot. On Thursday night, they have a nice dinner and a video presentation, you know, kind of showing a lot of stuff about Packers history and everything, really trying to give the rookies a taste of the organization, the history and tradition that they're walking into. And I would imagine from an emotional standpoint, you might say that that Vince Beagle ought to get pretty fired up when he watches this Packers history thing, because he's going to know a lot about it already, and he's going to be processing, like, you know, yeah, I am actually here now. I'm a Wisconsin kid who's going to play for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing, because we have seen it over the last few years. It might not always be a kid that played at Wisconsin and then goes and plays for the Packers, but, you know, you look at the Lance Kendrickses of the world, even getting a chance to come back now, and what that means to him and his family. And how much relation he still has in the Milwaukee area. You can tell with Vince Beagle, I mean, as we talked about last week, his father, you know, crying when he got selected by the in-state Packers. That's a big moment for a lot of kids. And I would imagine, you know, everybody, as they watch that video and gets that first taste of what it means to play for the Green Bay Packers, that Beagle's definitely going to have a special part of his heart dedicated towards, you know, learning a little bit more about that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, with that, Wes, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, in our final segment here, I just wanted to touch on a comment Mike McCarthy made at the end of the draft this past weekend, in which he said the goal, a sense, the objective for 2017 is to get two more wins than the Packers got in 2016. Obviously, he's referring to the fact that the Packers made the NFC Championship. They were two wins away from winning the whole thing. Those are the two wins that the Packers are looking for. And it's interesting because for all the talk about what the Packers need to do to upgrade the defense and fix things at the running back position, reload there, all of those kinds of things, it becomes easy to forget in some ways just how close this team was, that you were one of the last four teams standing at the end of it. And no, the NFC Championship did not go as planned. Atlanta was clearly the better team and won a big victory there. But the Packers are close, and yes, they lost a bunch of players in free agency. They've tried to replenish that with some free agents and then now obviously the draft class. But this team feels like it's still right there, even for all the criticism that it's taken, especially on the defensive side.
Yeah, and I think that's why, Mike, when you look at the evolution this year of how the Packers went about building this team for 2017, they made the decisions that they made. You know, you bring in Martellus Bennett, arguably the best tight end on the market. You bring in a Lance Kendricks to be another guy to factor into that equation. Jarry Evans getting signed. You know, the guy that has 6 Pro Bowls, 5 first team All Pros. I mean, just so much depth in terms of experience as well that they added before the draft even started.
Right.
And then you look at the draft itself, Mike, running back and defensive back specifically, those are positions where typically you can get contributions from guys immediately. So it just looks to me like this is a team that is ready to compete this year. Not that they aren't every year, but after the departures they had, the moves that they made sure that the Packers really aren't going to lose a step going into this next season.
Yeah, and the thing is, for all the talk about what happens here in the offseason, signing Martellus Bennett and Lance Kendricks and Jari Evans and drafting Kevin King and Vince Beagle and all these guys, none of these moves guarantee anything in this league. And when it comes to making that postseason run and trying to make that run for a championship, you want to be hot and playing well, and you want to try to be as healthy as you can be. Even those things are not necessarily a guarantee. You look at 2014 in the playoffs, the Packers were as healthy as they could have asked for, and then unfortunately things fell apart in the last 4 minutes in Seattle. Last season, the Dallas Cowboys were as healthy as you could possibly be in the postseason. They're the number one seed in the NFC. They have a bye. They're playing at home, and a banged-up Packers team goes in there, jumps out to a 21-3 lead, and then, you know, kicks a field goal to thwart their comeback, and the Packers move on, and the Cowboys are like, everything was lined up for us. Yeah. How does it not happen? That's the NFL.
That is the NFL, Mike, and that's the thing about it. When you have 12 teams going into the playoffs and only one is going to prevail, there is going to be some heart-wrenching moments for everybody involved in those 11 teams that don't ultimately get their final goal and their aspiration. But the thing is, this time of the year, all you can do is control what you can control. And I think the way the Packers have lined up this unit right now, offensively, defensively, the weapons that they have, it puts them in an intriguing spot right now. And in terms of looking at the powers of the NFC North and the NFC in general, the Packers are, right again, in that middle of that equation.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's going to be fun to follow it here as we continue through the offseason. But with that, we will sign off on Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. You can find the team account at Packers. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will see you next time.